This interview with Stanley Bobbitt Jr. was recorded on November 9th, 2021, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
For the record, my name is Stanley Bobbitt Jr. I didn't grow up in Baltimore. I grew up in PG County. And my mother and father was, they've been married for like 30-something years now. Growing up for me was like the lower runt. I have an oldest brother and then two younger brothers. I think growing up, I spent a lot of time under my oldest brother watching him and his life. And at the same time, as my oldest brother protected me, I'm trying to play protective for my brothers under me. And in schooling, I was just bad. I was bad. My birth mother, she left when I was like probably like 3 or 4. Basically told my father, take me with him or she's going to put me up for adoption. So when that time, I was a kid, but you know, you can tell the difference in someone, a child coming out of someone's womb and a child, someone raising a child. So a lot of my feelings was like pushed to the side. A lot of my feelings, a lot of my emotions was like empty. It was questions inside of me. I was wondering who I was. What was my role in this family? And I didn't really know. I think I got in trouble a lot. Well, I got in trouble all the way from middle school, from elementary school to high school. Class clown, cracking jokes on people. Just trying to be the funny guy, you know, trying to be the funny guy, get everybody laughing, not taking life serious, not taking education serious. So I failed a lot of grades, but in DC, they had the No Child Left Behind. So they just passed me along. They didn't really even care. They just passed me along. And I found myself, education wise, learning lines like, I don't even know nothing. I don't know anything. So, In that time right there, I was just a follower. I just follow a lot of guys, a lot of older guys, looking for my big brother and other guys, looking for my big brother who gonna be good to me, who gonna be nice to me, you know, doing a trend, whatever the guys did, that's what I did. Spend a lot of time outside, just outside, not even really doing nothing, like not like I'm trying to make some money. I'm just gonna be outside. Whatever they was doing outside, I wanted to be outside with, and I found myself just following people. Following, just not being me, just being a follower as I look back at it. And I think that was like prior to me going to incarceration, that was like a big issue with me. I didn't even know who I was. Somebody can put a battery in your back, but back then they were just saying like he's just easy to influence. I was just too easy to influence. If I seen this guy with these nice shoes, these nice clothes, nice girl, I'm like, man, I want what he got. I even started walking like this guy, talking like this guy. And music played a part. Jay-Z, listen to rap, listen to that stuff. That played a huge part to me. Wanting to be down, man, wanting to be down, you know? So that's it. That's growing up.
Go ahead, Stephanie. Throw another question in there from what he just said. What makes you think?
I guess what were some of the things that you did where you felt like you had to kind of follow people in ways that you might have been influenced in a bad way?
Oh, hustle.
Very good.
Hustling, selling drugs. I think I was influenced with that because, like I said, I spent a lot of time just standing outside. So these guys were just standing outside. They was running around. And because these guys just running around outside, I got with the program. Like, oh, yeah, they running around. They looking good. They doing them. They out here. People know them, the recognition, the fame they get in this neighborhood or wherever they go. I wanted that. Situations. One time, I was in high school at the time, and guys were shooting dice in high school, and I had my, like, $20 in my pocket. And this guy, he probably had probably, like, $400 in his pocket. He was winning the dice game. He had more money. He was winning the dice game. And he took one of my friend's money in the dice game, took all his money. And my friend was like, man, we're going to rob him. And so one day, later on that day, after the dice game, we watched him put his money in his coat. My man, like, just follow my lead. And we tricked the dude to come outside to play basketball. And when he came outside to play basketball, he took his coat off. We was in high school. It was like gym time. He took his coat off. And when he took his coat off, I picked up his coat and put on his coat. And I took the money out of his pocket. And I ended up going inside the building. And the building had a camera. We took the money. We had the money. But I ended up going to the youth center. Going to juvenile center for like 4 hours till my mother came and got me. So that's one.
Stephanie, did you have another question?
No, those were the two.
Go ahead, Alicia.
Yeah. So, you know, I hear you talking about how you were a follower and everything, but was there anything in the back of your mind that was just like, I don't need to be here, like I'm only doing this because of how my family treated me?
Yeah. Yeah. It always was playing in my back of my mind whenever I'd done something wrong or I was about to do something wrong. But when you a child, you don't want to seem like you scared. So I'm like, nah, I ain't scared. You feel me? I'm with it. I don't care whatever the consequence it is. I'm down with it. Like blind loyalty, blind friendships, believing like these people like hold weight into you. They hold weight to you. So they like, I want to be validated by these people. So anything it takes to be validated, I'm down with. Whether it's robbing, whether it's like setting somebody up, whatever, I'm with it. I was just a foolish kid.
And just because you said that for today's society, you know, the different generations that are changing, do you feel like kids still need to feel that validation because they don't?
Oh, yeah. See, when I was growing up, we didn't have the internet. So now you got Instagram and you got Facebook. So you got to validate yourself. So people take pictures of just, I'm in this $400,000 car. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. People are trying to validate this, so they're trying to find their place in the world through the internet. Everybody trying to find their place, especially when you're young, like little kids with crazy haircuts. I wasn't even, my mother and them wasn't paying no $40 for no haircut for me. We just get a regular haircut. We even had a dude cutting our hair in our kitchen because they found somebody, it was four of us, so they found somebody to do it for cheap. So it wasn't like everybody like how it is now, but now everybody putting on a fashion show. Everybody putting on a show, a mask for people to show them like, oh yeah, I'm living. I'm living my life. I'm doing the best me. When I was growing up, it wasn't like that. It was like, you gotta put some work in. Now they like, nah, you ain't gotta put no work in. You can take a picture. Everybody gonna get it. How many followers you gonna get? Even in school, kids with followers and Instagram, like I'd be amazed by it.
I need one of the fellows to, in their own words, ask Mr. Bobbitt what led to going to jail. What did he do? I need you to say it real directly. Right. Not copy my words, but I need somebody to ask him just like this.
I got you.
Okay, go ahead. Go right ahead.
What decisions in life made you lead yourself to jail?
What decision? Well, the main decision was poverty. Was broke. I graduated high school and I ain't have no plan. I didn't have no plan. Like, I was right outside with the fellas. Like, right after graduation, I was right outside with a bottle and some weed. We standing outside. I didn't have no plans. Nobody was like, well, you should go off to college. You should do this. You should do that. My family, my mother and father suggested, but it wasn't pushed. So I was like, cool. You feel me? I'm throwing them off like, I need a grace spirit. Give me a grace spirit to make my mind if I don't want to go right to school. And I didn't have no plan though. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know where I was going. I was like, man, to be honest, I thought I'd be one of the biggest drug dealers there is. Like, and I wasn't even selling drugs for the recognition. It was for my family. I wanted the money. I wanted the money. So I know money changes things. I know money brings power. I know money make people look at you in a different way. Money open doors that usually be shut in your face. So so me and a couple of guys, we was hanging out, me and my friends, we was hanging out. And it's crazy because all that summer long, they kept playing the movie, Spike Lee, Do the Right Thing. And we kept, that was our little inside joke. We was like, yeah, Spike Lee said it wrong, man. It's so hard to do the right thing, man. Right thing. So we came up with a plan to make some money for all of us. So we went and robbed a grocery store, and we went inside and robbed the grocery store. I pulled the trigger and killed the young man. And when I killed the young man, my friends, they was in shock. They was in panic. And I was in shock and I was in panic, and we ran. We just ran. We took the money and we just ran. We used the money to advance us in the drug game. But as you know, with anything in life, it's always always checks and balances. So even though we felt like we was winning, we was losing at the same time, because here we are holding this secret, digging our grave even much deeper into this quote-unquote underworld. We digging deeper into it. And sure enough, it's just a matter of time before what you think you can run from eventually find you. So that's how I ended up in prison.
I need somebody to ask Mr. Stan, what was it like at that moment, you know, like when the trigger pulled?
I got you. So what was it like in that moment, like when you was feeling like, damn, I really just did this? What was that moment like?
At that moment in time, I was numb. I was numb. I became numb. I became numb to life. Just thinking about that moment, because it happened at a nighttime. It happened, it was dark outside. And we all ran our own separate ways and we split it up. And when we met at our mutual, before we got to our mutual place, I started walking. And my mind just was running like, damn, what just happened? I was trying to play it, digest it all in, but I really couldn't. I was like, dang, what just happened? And I was like, dang.
I'm sorry, Stan, did I interrupt you? I thought you had ended. I'm sorry.
No, I wasn't finished. You
go ahead, man. Go ahead.
I was just like, dang, what just happened? I was trying to digest it all in. Play it back in my head. I just remember the shots going off and me pulling the trigger, watching this man collapse. And I ran. So here I was, I just started becoming numb. I just became numb. So when we got back together, all of us, it was like, everybody good? And they asked me, like, you good? You good? And I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. So that night, I went inside my mother's house. I went upstairs to my room and I changed my clothes. And before I can walk out the door, my mother was sitting there playing solitaire at the computer. She was like, come in. Come in. Come talk to me. Come talk to me. Come talk to me. And I was like, Mom, I got somewhere to go. I got somewhere to be. She said, all you do is rip and run. That's all you do. You need to slow down. And I walked out the door. And when I went outside, they was talking about going to hang out. And I was like, I'm good. I ain't really going to go hang out. I went to a neighborhood park, and I just sit down in the park, and I smoked a blunt, looking at the sky, to like 4 a.m. And I came in the house.
Now, I know there's some good questions coming off of what Mr. Bobbitt just said. So, Jalea, can you come up with anything? I know this is your first night in class, but from what you've heard so far, are there any questions forming in your mind?
Hold on.
Take your time. Get your thought together and then spit it out. Think before you say it, then say it.
If poverty wasn't the issue that led you to jail, what else would be another issue that led you to jail besides poverty? Like maybe mental health issues, or what do you think could have led to going to prison rather than it just being poverty?
Lack of vision, lack of moral support. No one really like put their hands on me and was like, this is what you need to do, young man. This is what you need to go at. This is how you need to take it. Everybody was like, just get a job. And I was like, I'm watching dudes make money hand over fist without a job. And they got their own schedule. Why would I get a job? Like, that don't make sense. I'm going to stand out here in this corner. That's going to be my job. But not knowing the hours I put in this corner, this person at McDonald's making double the money. Less stress, but double the money. I didn't have nobody like really on me to like tell me like, this is what you need to do. This is the way you need to go. The communication was there, and I couldn't even vent it. I couldn't even communicate that to people. I didn't know which way I was going. I didn't know who I was. That's like a fearful thing for me at that time. Like, you don't want to let people. I didn't want to let people know in my vulnerable spot. Like, dang, I'm weak right here. I don't have no vision. I don't have no goals. I don't have no morals. I don't have no principles. I'm just moving with life. Whatever life brings, that's what I'm gonna take. And that was that's a good question. And I definitely was lost. I was just lost. Lost can be to sum it up. And I think nobody seen me as lost. They just seen it like, oh, he'll figure it out. Because my parents at the time, they was in there 35, 36 year old, they just working. working. Long only thing they know is long as we keeping a roof over their head, they fine. So we just gonna work. We gonna work. It was no communication in my household. Still not no communication. It's still like you just go off how you feel. You know, my family still be trying to figure me out while I try to explain to them who I am. So that's one of the things.
Who else you got, Alicia?
I have one more, but I'll wait until she asks her question.
Okay. Who you got, Alicia? Anybody? Still there, Alicia?
Excuse me, Mr. Stan. I just wanted to add to that one point that he said about like Instagram and like stuff like that, like the internet thing.
Go ahead. Just wanted to add on.
First off, my name is Tyler. Nice to meet you, sir.
Sure.
One thing I wanted to add was just that, like, I really felt that because I work out at a boxing gym and stuff like that. And one message I'm trying to promote to people is, like, to stop doing stuff for others' validation. And I use boxing as an example because I've been there for 4 years. And, like, I notice a lot of people joining and quitting and stuff like that, but always taking pictures, putting it on IG and stuff like that. So one thing I'm trying to, like, tell, not just because I love my gym, like, if not love, you know, I have respect for my gym and I have respect for all my teammates, like family. So one thing I try to tell them is that, like, when you clout chase, you put yourself, and you put others, if not in danger, but you put them in, like, positions because, like, you know, it always spreads an image. Like, let's say you post a photo of us doing everything at the gym day in and day out, you're making us look like we're a bunch of attention seekers. So, like, I was just saying, I agree with your point because, like, I really can't stand clout chases. And one thing I live by is, like, just be your own person and make your own choices. Even if you're making a bad choice, I respect you if you're doing it because that's who you are instead of you doing it to please others.
Yeah.
That was pretty profound. Cute. So can you boil that down to a question, Ty?
How do you feel about people, about clout chasers?
See, y'all call them clout chasers. Like, when I was growing up, we just looked at him as, like, as myself, attention seekers. You know, people used to ask me when I was growing up, what, you don't get enough attention in the house? That's why you show off in school. I'm like, no, my mama don't give me good attention. I just ain't know my place in life. I didn't even know my own place in my own family. Even though I'm the second oldest, I still get overlooked, like, oh, no, he's not the second oldest. We go to his brother under him. You know what I mean? I still get overlooked. Sometimes it bothers me. Sometimes I have to speak up like, hey, I'm the second. Oh, you come. A decision need to be made. Y'all need to come to me too. I just don't overlook my opinion. And I think that's what a lot of people are looking for, attention seekers, because we want somebody to hear our cries. We want somebody to see us. Just see me. I don't care if you just speak to me or ask me how my day going or why did I get this meal from McDonald's? Just ask me. Why? Just see me for one point in time. Just see me. Don't just live around me. People, I think we exist with each other, but we don't see each other. If that makes sense?
Yeah, yes. That makes sense.
I kind of understand you on that point when you say, like, people want to, like, attention, like, to see around you. I understand that part. But if, let's say, you had the communication with your people and, like, people gave you attention, would I try to avoid those decisions that you make?
Yeah. Yeah, because all that stuff boils down to love. So what you don't seek in your house, you seek somewhere else because it's a void. So I was seeking outside of my neighborhood. Like, it's cool being a funny guy. I'm a cool guy. Like, I get attention. People know when they walk up to me or they're around me, we're going to have a good time. That's cool. That's good attention. That draws something out. They make you feel like you're there, your worth, your value. That validates you. And when you go in the house, like, everybody else just living their life. My mother and father, they coming, they 9 to 5. So they come home from work, they sleep, they go back to work. You feel me? That's their mindset. So where the attention at? It's no attention. It was never no one in my household. Like, did you do your homework? You doing your homework? You on top of your homework? It was, did you do it? Yeah, I did it. There's nobody going to check behind me, so I can just tell you I did it. You know, I even had, like, sporting events. I played basketball, high school basketball. My parents never came. They never came. Like, in communication-wise to them, it's like, oh, well, you'll be fine. I got work. I got work. You want them shoes that you playing ball in. You know, you want that jacket you got this winter. How you think you got all that? I worked for that. So that was to compensate for the attention. I'm paying for stuff. In the long run, like growing up, you think like, okay, I know he's trying to provide, or my mother trying to provide. But when you look as an adult, you're like, dang, what's the worth? Is it time or is it money? Which one weighs out, which one more important to you in your life, time or money? So now here I am as an adult, after doing all this time in incarceration, I learned that time more important than money. To me, some people may not ever say that. They may, oh no, I need my money. I don't need the money. I don't need my money because I'll give it away. I don't care for it. I don't care no more for it, because I know if you hold a value to the money, then that will drive you. That will make you miss out on the small things of life, the time, man, you can never get that back. You can never pay for that. Like today, you will never pay for it today. It just came to you for free. Everything you done, either you had a great day or you had a A-okay day. But it's on you. It's on you on how your day went and how your day is. That you can't pay for that. Yeah, you can have money in your pockets. That can make you feel good. But what if you don't have money in your pocket? Can you still be happy? Can you still smile? So I changed my perspective. No money do not dictate how I feel. Money in my pocket don't make me feel like I'm a grown man. Money in my pocket don't make me feel like I'm the boss. Don't make me feel like I'm the king. Don't make me feel like, man, it's my block. I'm somebody. Y'all better recognize me when I go in this grocery store, this clothing store. Nah. Money in your pocket don't make you real. What make you real is knowing who you are. And when I was a child, I'm good.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead and wrap up for me. I'm sorry. You know what? I know you got a lot to say, man. I know, and yeah, we love it. I would rather you talk than we have to beg you to talk. So that's good. Listen, Alicia, can you help me here? Janiel, did you want to get something in?
I did. And actually, how you doing, Mr. Bobbitt?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good.
All right. I actually had a few questions lined up, but you just answered them. So for me now, I want to know a little bit about, you know, can you tell us about the days leading up to your arrest and sentencing?
Man, the days leading up to my arrest, I'm going to start off a month leading up to my arrest, because I got locked up in July, like July 15th. So early June, the detective started just hounding my mother's house. They was looking for me. They just wanted questions because I didn't get incarcerated. I got incarcerated a year later. So someone I grew up with who knew about the situation ended up telling, because he got into a situation. He got into something in the streets and he couldn't get out of it. So he basically said, well, I'll trade his life in for my life. I'll tell you about the situation. So when the detectives came, it's funny how God is. That's the only thing I can say. It's funny how God is. So when the detectives came for me, I was still in the underworld, but I was working a 9-to-5. It's crazy. I was working as a janitor, like at this school. And it was the sweetest job ever. It was like, I feel like I needed a cover up on what I was doing because I was progressing in the underworld, but I didn't have really no cover up. So anyone who seen me, they knew like, oh, he's selling. You could just tell. You could just see it in my, I got maximum money. Who got cash money in their pocket like that? Like, you can't go nowhere and buy nothing. It ain't going to happen. People know, like, even if you don't say it, they know. So I got a job as a janitor in this big old day school out in Bowie, Maryland. Nobody know me out there. So I'm just working. And as I'm working, my mother contacted me and let me know, because I wasn't living at my mother at the time. She contacted me, let me know that the detectives keep coming past her house looking for me. So she's like, did you do anything wrong out there? Because they looking for you. So I'm like, no, Mom, I ain't do nothing wrong. I don't know who they looking for me for. They got the wrong person. So detectives just keep coming, keep hounding for like 2 weeks. So my father gives in. He like, I'm giving you a number. I'm giving them everything about you. You don't live here. I'm letting them know everything. So I'm like, all right. So they call me. And now I break my phone. I throw my phone. I'm like, nah, I don't know these people. I don't know what's going on. So the more I try to hide, the more the pressure started. Like the walls was closing in. So I'm at work one day and I had a new phone number. The detective just called me like, I'm gonna find you. He said, I just want you for questioning, but I'm gonna hound you down until you come in for questioning. If you never did nothing wrong, just come in for questioning. And I was like, all right, set it up. I said, I'm gonna bring my mom with me just in case you try to lock me. He's like, no, we ain't gonna lock you up. We just want some questions. So I'm like, all right. So with the school I worked at, they had this big old field. Dang, nobody, I never told nobody this story either. They had this big old field. And so I went outside to the field. It was like a summer day. I went outside to the field and I looked up to the sky. And I asked God, I said, God, man, I ain't in control. I done did some messed up stuff in my life. I think this one I bit off more than I could chew. So I asked him, just take it. Just have it. Man, I surrender. I surrender, man. Just I need you to guide me. I need you. I need you to hold this thing up for me because what's in the dark comes to the light. So I said, I need you, man. And I went down to the city detectives. They just gave me questions. They hit my mom with a warrant, searched the house, didn't find anything. And I walked home because the precinct, the detective center wasn't too far from my mother's house. So I walked home back to my mother's house. And she was just mad at me, like, you got the police running through my house and searching through stuff. What have you done out there? Did you really kill somebody? If you did this, you need to never come out there. I don't even want to see you. Don't come to my house no more. And then here come my father, like, don't have the police knocking my door down. Kicking in my door for you. You don't live here. I got other kids in here. I don't have time to be dealing with you. So I'm like, man, I ain't do nothing wrong. But I'm lying. I did something wrong. So fast forward, like 4th of July weekend, I planned to go up to New York City to go see the fireworks. And I stalled out. I thought I knew who was putting the police on me. So I had plans and intention of killing this dude. And it's funny how God is, because what I planned, I didn't, nothing ended up happening. And this dude never even told on me. So I was plotting this dude. I got so drunk because I was so mad. I got so drunk one night, drinking my wet, got so drunk. That night I was going to do it. I got drunk and I ended up totaling my car, crashing my car. And I was in the state trooper barricade that night. And I was drunk, but I was like, man, I hope they don't run my fingerprints. I hope they don't lock me up tonight. I hope they don't lock me up tonight. They ended up letting me off on personal reconnaissance. And my father came and got me. And he said, man, I'm just tired of you. I'm just tired of you. Don't you no longer just call me when you get in trouble. Just you on your own. Man, I was like 18, 19 years old. He was like, you on your own, man. You on your own. I did my part. You graduated high school. Don't call me no more. And I went home, and probably like a week later, when I was working at the school, that morning they came and locked me up right there. I just dropped my head. It was like, do you know what you're under arrest for? I said, I don't know, but I'm gonna find out. And the detective was like, yeah, we got you. Do you got anything you want to say? I said, I don't got nothing I want to say. Just take me where you're gonna take me, and I'm gonna make a phone call. And I ain't been free since.
That was pretty deep. That was pretty deep.
Question for that, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, to her. We got about 5 minutes left, so we're gonna start wrapping it up.
Yeah. So, Mr. Stanley, do you feel as though that you care that you were jeopardizing your own life plus your family's life as well when you were making these decisions?
Nah, I care for my life. I care for the reputation in the streets. The reputation for my family, at least I knew nobody wasn't going to play with today. Like, oh yeah, that brother right there, he going to do whatever. You feel me? He going to do whatever for his family. So for me, it was a reputation, but at the same time, it was like a validation for me and my family. But I was just being stupid and foolish because people don't really care. People don't really care. I was just so stupid and foolish, caught up in the fame. The fame, man. The underworld got a fame of itself. A pull on you, like, you'll never believe. You just be caught up in the fame of that. Like, yeah, I'm somebody. People know about me out here in these streets. How foolish I was.
I need somebody to ask Mr. Stan. Let's get to the incarceration experience itself. I need somebody to hit it right on the head.
Right.
To basically say, can you tell me the worst thing you've ever seen? Somebody put it in your own words.
Can you tell me, like, the worst thing that you ever seen when you was locked up or incarcerated? Like, what was the experience inside? Did you see, like, inmates fight? Or were you involved in a fight or altercation with another inmate?
I seen two things that was, like, still stick with me to this day. The first thing I seen, I was fresh in prison. I was like, I was probably like 20, 21, and I was down ECI, and they put me on, they got a tear down there for everybody under the age of 25. So I was on this tear with just my peers, basically. And a guy had on some New Balances, fresh like me. He was freshly in jail. He just had on some brand new New Balances, and a guy wanted his New Balances. He was like, I ain't giving up my New Balances, bro. I ain't going for that. They offered him some money. He said no. The next thing you know, like three of them circled him and beat him, like stumped him. It looked like his brain was about to pop out his head. All for his New Balances. I was like, dang, put some shoes that only one person can wear. And they rotated, and I looking back at it, they rotated them shoes amongst each other. That was one thing that stuck out to me, like fashion and stuff. I never tried to be like loud and dressing. I try to just be cool because people pay attention. People hungry out here. They do whatever they want it. And the next thing that I really experienced, well, I watched someone get stabbed up. The dude was running his mouth, man, talking to another dude like he was bullying him, basically, like, in his words. And a young kid was tired of it. He was tired of a guy talking to him like that. So he let him sit down in the chair in the rec hall and play chess. So while the dude had his back turned, he just walked up to him and started stabbing him in his throat, his back, his neck, top of his head. He just was stabbing him. Like, he blacked out. The police was spraying him with the mace and trying to tell him stop, but he blacked out. I think all this pain kicked in him of what he was going through. And I just see his eyes. He looked empty. He was dead, but he was gone. You could just see it.
Does it still haunt you today, Stan?
Do it haunt me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I try to get to the bottom of every issue in life. Like, look, if me and a person have a disagreement, I want to make sure this person is not mad at all. Like, you good? I'm good. You feel, please know that I'm in peace. I am not with nothing else. And I try to, from that moment on, I try to see things three moves ahead. Okay. Even if I say something, I try to backplay on how I say it because I don't want this person to be offended. Even though I may have said it aggressively or I may have said it in a way where he may feel like I offend him. And I'd be like, oh, man, I apologize. I don't mean to offend you. I try to be like that because people's feelings are real. People got feelings out here, and you got to be careful how you present things. As my man, as I seen Bill Cosby say, he said, you don't want to serve me a steak on a trash can. So I try to use that metaphor in life.
Mm-hmm. We got time for one more question.
Can I be the last one?
If there's anybody who hasn't gotten in a question, is there anybody who didn't get a chance to ask a question that wants to? And if not, Alicia, you call it. I thought I saw Janelle wanted to say something. I don't know. Can we get two quick questions in and maybe two quick answers? Let's go for it. Go ahead. Who you say, Alicia?
Okay. Mine's real short. All I was going to ask was, were there any memories that you wanted to repress, wanted to put in the back of your brain, just like, I do not want to bring this up anymore?
Memory I never want to bring up again. When I was in Hagerstown, you got to walk like a long walk to go to the kitchen. I never want to, because a lot of stuff goes down that walk. That was a scary walk. That was scary every day, winter, spring, summer, fall, and it's a long walk. And you got to watch people. You got to see people because people be moving, and you got to be on them because one bump can lead to a fight. So I be like, I never want to see that again. I be walking like that out here on the streets. I be letting people get in front of me and I stop. Like, go ahead, you could go. Because I know what it can happen in that one bump.
Mm-hmm. Janiel.
Upon your release, what are some changes you decided to make for your life?
God and praying. That's one thing. Secondly, was a vision. Goals. Know what I want to do. Have goals. Set goals for myself. And thirdly, was ask. Don't be afraid to ask for advice, for help. Be able to communicate transparency of who I am, where I'm struggling at. And if I got an issue with something, share it. Have a circle of friends where you can share the issue with somebody. I realize that somebody always going through something. And little do you know, if you share, it'll go a long way. So,
hey, let me get a quick question in. You don't have to really go and expound on this. How many years did you get? How many years did you spend? How old were you when you went in and came out? Just quickly, just so I can mark it down. You don't have to really answer it long-winded at all. Just no quick answers. How old were you when you first went in, Stan?
I was 19 when I got incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
This
13
is just for me
years.
To write down the facts. Okay, so you did 13 years. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
13 years, eight months, and mm-hmm. I got 20. I had a 20-year sentence, and I'm 33 now. 33.
Okay. We got 9 minutes left. I'm going to take a real chance and give one other person one more shot, and then we're going to wrap it up.
No mean to bombard you with questions, but like you
it's
said,
all good. I like it.
Like you said that you go, like you see life right now, like I said, you know, you let the person go in front of you, do this and that.
Don't but ask it too long now. Don't keep it short now, Tyler.
But if you try to like move, if you're trying to like move on, if you had like a mentor, or will you have? Hold on, give me a minute. If you had like a mentor in life, like after prison, like a mentor to help you and guide you, and before prison, would you have listened to your mentor to like go moving forward to a better life?
Yes, man. I would look forward to a mentor. When I was a child, yes, because like my oldest brothers, he was my father. He was still putting his life together, and my father, he do not know how to communicate. He grew up without no father. His communication is, I ain't gotta do nothing for you. You're a man. So if I do something, I'm doing it from my kind of my heart. So he didn't know how to communicate. I didn't ever have a man to communicate to me, like struggling with some things as a man, insecurities, like pride issues, like. Like I said, for me, money, I wouldn't even talk to no woman if I had no money in my pocket. Like, I feel like I can't do nothing for you. Not knowing that that's one aspect of the game now. I need to understand. I was so lost. And as far as, like, me consciously of moving now, like, letting people get in front of me, I say excuse me a lot. I'd be like, excuse me. Plus, I know people look so much in a rush to go nowhere. So I try to be mindful of, like, you ain't going nowhere. Even if I'm at the light, somebody blowing their horn, bah, 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 behind me is a car in front of me. I'm like, where we going at? We're so urgent. If you made an appointment, you should have left 25 minutes early. I feel like
It sounds like you're really at peace. It sounds like you you're free and you're happy about it.
Yeah, I am. I'm very happy. I'm very happy because I used to be sitting in jail. I used to sit in prison and be like, my time come. My time come. And I seen so many people come back, take it for granted, come back. And I made a vow to myself, I wasn't going to be one of them people. And at the same time, I'm not going to go back to my old vomit. I'm going to stay focused and take it one day at a time. One day at a time, absorb it in. It's a whole, what people done in 30 years or 13 years, I can't do. How long have I been on? 39 days. I can't do that in 39 days. It's impossible. That'd be something that man never thought of. So I got to take it. It took God 7 days to create. Come on, man. I can't make nothing in no 39 days. So I'm just taking my time, taking it one day at a time. Doing the right things. I believe, like, you reap what you sow. So if I keep doing the right things, I'm going to make it. If I hold my value system into my character and that's my progress work, I'm going to be good. You know, so That's it.
Stand the man.
I feel you on that.
We thanks, really, really guys. Thank you. Do you all just want to say thank you real quick? Just to just say thanks to Mr. Bobbitt?
Thank you.
Like,
thank you. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Because literally, the reason I said thank you for like being in this class, being in this fellowship is like, it's opening to like new worlds. Because I have friends like Custer and stuff like that. And when I go to visit them in Rikers Island and they tell me their story, and it's like, damn, this could have really been me right now.
That's did you just say Rikers, Tyler? Did you say yeah. Rikers up in New York? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Because I've been like, damn, this could have been me. If I followed this, that this could have been me. That's what I've been.
Man, like, I'm glad it really has that effect on you. I'm really glad it has that effect. So, Stan, yo, here's the thing. Like, I think we're pretty much like, wrapped up for tonight.
Man,
you really hit us. You know what? There's a strong possibility that we might, because we want to like enhance this class. We want to kind of spread it out a little bit. Hey, Greg, is there anything you wanted to add it on the end here, man? Greg may be gone. Greg is one of our co-instructors, Stan, and he's helped get a lot of our guests for us, you know, who were formerly incarcerated like himself. So he always gives us like these words of wisdom. But man, I have your phone number. I wish we could talk longer, but you know what? You really touched base on everything we asked.
So man, we can keep on talking, man. We can keep on talking, man. I ain't got nowhere to go at.
Go ahead, Tyler.
Like, is it cool if some of the fellowships like get your number because they want to ask you any questions or talk to you, get some advice?
Yeah, you give my number. I'm going to give it to you right now. It's crazy because I was thinking that. I'm like, dang, I might need to give them my number.
Go ahead.
So they can reach out to me. Cause I don't work right now. Like I told myself I wasn't getting into the 9-to-5 thing. I don't want to be on a wheel. I don't want to be on the wheel. I want to do what I feel like God is calling me to do. And that is young people, mentorship, speaking to them, motivational speaking, through the church, whatever God called me to do in that angle, I'm trying to do it. I don't want to miss my purpose on this earth. I feel like everything has a purpose. You look at a tree, you're like, why that tree right there? That tree got a purpose right there. You knew what was living inside that tree. You'd be like, hey, all this stuff living in this one tree. Why did we cut this tree down? It reminded me of Yosemite Park, where they were like, oh, yeah, we're gonna kill the wolves, kill all these wolves off. And the more wolves they killed, the more deers they got. And then they realized, like, damn, we need the wolves because they help us fend off the deers. Nah, man, everything has a purpose. Everything. Even incarceration. Because if I didn't get incarcerated, and to be honest with y'all, I would have been dead because I was so caught up in the friendship. I was so caught up in trying to impress these dudes that these dudes could tell me go around the corner. I would have went around the corner. That's how lost I was.